Illinois, illegal immigrants accused of child trafficking after 16-year-old miscarries, revealing a parent's sexual abuse. By Neil Monroe on August 25, 2022. The D.C. establishment allowed a family of illegal migrants in Illinois to import children for slavery and sex, according to court documents filed in central Illinois. Three members of the Guatemalan family of illegal migrants are facing life sentences, and additional members may face rape charges. Officials and pro-migration advocates prefer not to enforce the nation's immigration laws, but sometimes a case pops up in front of them and they can't ignore it, said Jessica Vaughn, the policy director at the Center for Immigration Studies. She added, "They ought to be ashamed, and everyone else who has looked the other way at what's going on at the border and especially what goes on once people are released into the interior. People who support catch-and-release policies are in denial about the human cost and abuse that is facilitated by these policies." Victim 1 was first identified in 2016, at the age of 10, when she was brought over the border by a man who claimed to be her father. President Barack Obama's border agents detected the fraud and sent the man back to Guatemala. But his deputies also sent the child to live in Illinois with the man's sister, an illegal alien named Katerina Domingo Juan. Victim 1 is one of roughly 150,000 girls and 300,000 boys admitted since 2016 to the U.S. under Congress 2008 law for unaccompanied alien children. President Donald Trump temporarily curbed the inflow in 2020 amid furious opposition by congressional Democrats. Victim 1 was next noticed in March 2021, when the border agents were under the control of Alejandro Mayorkas, Joe Biden's anti-enforcement Homeland Security chief. But she only came to the attention of officials after she was brought to a hospital after a miscarriage that required surgery, said a July 25 court statement from Trevor Waite, an agent with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. The statement, which has the case number 2:22CR20057CSBIL, continues, "Throughout the approximately 5 years victim I resided in Champaign, ill, with Katerina Domingo Juan. She was subjected to regular physical abuse by Katerina Domingo Juan, including being beaten, stabbed with a kitchen knife, and burned with a pan of oil. Additionally, Victim 1 was sexually assaulted by four male members of Katerina Domingo Juan's extended family. Victim 1 told Katerina Domingo Juan about the sexual assaults. Victim I initially went to school but then starting at the age of 12 was forced to start working, initially cleaning hotels, when she was not in school. Eventually she was forced to go to work full-time instead of going to school. While working at the hotel, Victim 1 received her pay, in cash, from an unknown male. However, once she returned home, Katerina Domingo Juan took all of the money Victim 1 had received as pay. Through this initial interview, law enforcement learned the following. Katerina Domingo Juan's two sons had raped Victim I numerous times. And Victim I told Katerina Domingo Juan about the rapes. Victim I stated she was unaware that she was pregnant until doctors advised her that she had a miscarriage, the statement said. The Guatemalan mother of Victim 1 had handed her over in 2016 to the woman's brother, who is named Domingo Francisco Juan. The mother got an official document naming the brother as the original father after he promised that he would be able to get Victim 1 an education and would provide Victim 1 with a cell phone, the statement says. When the brother was turned back at the border, Victim 1 was transferred to the sister's house in Champaign, Illinois, by the Department of Health and Human Services, even though the sister was both an illegal migrant and unrelated to the child. After the brother sneaked back into the United States, he demanded $10,000 to return Victim 1 to her mother in Guatemala. The brother was repeatedly deported from the United States, according to his case, 2:22CR20020CIBIL, in 2000, 2011, 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016, and 2019. Victim 2 was recorded at the border in June 2019, at the age of 13. She lived with Katerina Domingo Juan's sister, Lorenza Domingo Castaneda, according to the document. The second victim also reportedly worked at hotels and Plastipak packaging, the document says. Both victims and the illegal migrants worked in various jobs under a variety of fake federal and state IDs, the statement said. The following Social Security cards were amongst those found and were bearing the following names and Social Security numbers. A. Janelle Bernice Camcho, 64710-3469. B. Lizard Yvonne Echeverria, 61920-2952. C. Anna Rebecca Martinez, 60219-4463. D. Margarita Guadalupe Lopez, 635-429-906. E. Casey Marie Sevilla, 627-683-069. An August 18 statement from Biden's Justice Department glossed over the child trafficking drama. The defendants conspired to bring two minor victims from Guatemala to the United States to work and isolated the victims in their homes, restricted their communications with their family in Guatemala, and subjected them to physical, verbal and psychological abuse, among other coercive means. The department's press release did not include links to the court documents, nor even a case number to help reporters find the details. The Washington Times, however, published many of the details. The federal government does not want people to hear too much about this case, said Vaughn. They're not bragging that they have dismantled this human trafficking, and they're not doing anything to prevent it from happening again. Progressives also want to ignore the shocking crimes of labor trafficking and sex trafficking, she said. It doesn't fit their narrative that migration is like a refugee event with people needing safe haven, as opposed to the human smuggling and trafficking bonanza and opportunistic migration that it is. They want to see this like the Emma Lazarus poem, "Give me your tired, your poor, / your huddled masses," as if these are all people fleeing oppression and desperate. But their policies are actually enticing people to put themselves and their children in great danger and to be exploited after they get here. Nearly all progressive reporters have been eager to ignore the case and the issue. She said, they overlook the trafficking, because they prefer the story of the immigrant struggle, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil, as you hand the child over because you're in denial. But some of the child labor cases are getting publicized, she said, citing recent reports by Reuters about child labor in an auto plant and a slaughterhouse in Alabama. On August 22, Reuters also publicized a no fine, no jail settlement in another child labor case in Alabama. The growing child labor workforce is an open secret among the business-backed advocates for more migration. Honestly, I think almost everyone in the system knows that most of the migrant teens are coming to work and send money back home. Maria Wolfgen, executive director and founder of the Young Center for Immigrant Children's Rights, told a ProPublica reporter in 2020. They want to help their parents, she said. The media passivity towards slave labor is a sharp change from the media's outrage at President Donald Trump's enforcement of border and immigration laws, she said. Back then, and still in 2022, headlines touted child separation stories because progressives wanted to use the foreign children as political props in their campaign to weaken border enforcement, Vaughn explained. Establishment media outlets also downplay the record deaths among migrants and the prevalence of sexual abuse of migrants, but are eager to play up any restrictions on the migrants' ability to move into Americans' jobs, communities, and society. A few Republicans have plans to deal with the labor and sex trafficking across the chaotic border, she said. A few members of Congress are trying to drag information out of the administration to expose what's going on. A few state governors are trying to push back on this. Most notably Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, and to some extent, Governor Greg Abbott in Texas. But mostly this has become a campaign talking point for Republicans, and it remains to be seen what they will do if they are able to gain control over even one house of Congress. GOP leaders prefer to focus mainly on the border itself, narrowly, not other policies that are necessary to truly address the problem, she said, adding. They're not talking about asylum reform, they're not talking about preventing illegal hiring. They're not talking about addressing no enforcement, sanctuaries. They're mostly focused on the border and the border alone. And that is not enough. The case is U.S. v. Domingo Juan, 22 MJ-7098, in the U.S. District Court for the Central District of Illinois. Extraction migration. It is easier for government officials to grow the economy by immigration than by growing exports, productivity, or the birth rate. So Washington, D.C. deliberately extracts millions of migrants from poor countries and uses them as workers, consumers, and renters. This extraction migration policy grows and skews the national economy. It shifts vast wealth from ordinary people to investors, billionaires, and Wall Street. It makes it difficult for ordinary Americans to advance in their careers, get married, raise families, or buy homes. Extraction migration slows innovation and shrinks Americans' productivity, partly because it allows employers to boost stock prices by using stoop labor and disposable workers instead of productivity-boosting technology. This migration policy also reduces exports by minimizing shareholder pressure on U.S. companies to build up beneficial and complementary trade with people in poor countries. Migration undermines employees' workplace rights, and it widens the regional wealth gaps between the Democrats' big coastal states and the Republicans' heartland and southern states. An economy fueled by extraction migration also drains Americans' political clout over elites, alienates young people, and radicalizes Americans' democratic civic culture because it allows wealthy elites to ignore despairing Americans at the bottom of society. This economic strategy is enthusiastically pushed by progressives who wish to transform the U.S. from a society governed by European-origin civic culture into a progressive-directed empire of competitive, resentful identity groups. "We're trying to become the first multiracial, multi-ethnic superpower in the world," Representative Rohit Khanna, DCA, told the New York Times in March 2022. "It will be an extraordinary achievement. We will ultimately triumph," he boasted. But the progressives' colonialism-like economic strategy kills many migrants. It exploits the poverty of migrants and splits foreign families as it extracts human resources from poor home countries to serve wealthy U.S. investors. Progressives hide this extraction migration economic policy behind a wide variety of noble-sounding explanations and theatrical border security programs. Progressives claim the U.S. is a nation of immigrants, that migration helps migrants, and that the state must renew itself by replacing populations. Similarly, establishment Republicans, media businesses, and major GOP donors hide the skew towards investors by ignoring the pocketbook impact and by touting border chaos, welfare spending, migrant crime, and drug smuggling. Many polls show the public wants to welcome some immigration. But the polls also show deep and broad public opposition to labor migration and the inflow of temporary contract workers into jobs needed by young U.S. graduates. This third rail opposition is growing: anti-establishment, multiracial, cross-sex, non-racist, class-based, bipartisan, rational, persistent, and recognizes the solidarity that American citizens owe to one another.